Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. Really excited today because we have in the studio for the Dr. Eric Higgins, Eye of the Diabetic Tiger Show.
By no, it's not Eric Kahn. We have not found Eric Kahn.
I actually thought about that. I said, Eric, do you know where the other Eric is? But no, that's not fair. And the other thing is he did not come up with the Eye of the Diabetic Tiger because he has class and I don't. But I put that in as the title of the show.
Tony, you're school on Sunday, aren't you?
Yeah, I sure am. Well, I thought a lot about this one, to be honest with you. But from the University of Kentucky, Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology, Dr. Eric Higgins. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Tony.
Shelley Irving is on assignment in Isomville, and here, through the inefficiency and ineptitude of the Trump administration, is the UK Interim Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure to tell you about our web presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, there are probably people that will believe you when you say that, and that's just not right.
Well, I thought about a security lapse, but I said, let's go broader. I mean, the only way that we would keep you on the show is because of Trump.
Let's be honest. We've been around since Clinton, probably. That's when the mistake happened.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
All right.
Would you like to know about what's happened since the Clinton administration? We have this thing called the World Wide Web. You can go out on the internet and you can listen to the show. If you liked what you just heard, unfortunately, you can listen to it over and over and over. But you have to go to WMKY.org. That's right. Moorhead State Public Radio's website. It's there for your listening pleasure. Just go to through the menus, find Health Matters. You'll see a list of the most recent shows. There's a link there to the audio. There's a show summary, but my goodness, just listen to it. Don't read about it. After you've listened to it, after you've sent it out to all your friends, after you've subscribed to the podcast, it's time to express your displeasure with us. Jump over to facebook.com/HMRadioshow, and there you will find a fan page. It is a page devoted to Health Matters. Yes, that's right. Tony needs a devoted audience. That is how he gets it, right there. Facebook fan page. Leave your feedback. Leave comments. Give us show suggestions. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Look for things that we post on there. You'll see things that are relevant in the news. You'll see things that are about health research. You'll see things we think are funny or interesting related to the topic of health. Sometimes not the topic of health. Anyway, it's right there on the fan page. Just visit Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, the top four diabetic eye conditions. Reminding you, roughly 8% of the U.S. population is diabetic, and about 28% of those diabetics have some form of eye trouble. And we're going to go through these top four diabetic eye conditions. The first one, which is not limited to diabetes, but is made worse by diabetes, is cataract. The reference I had called them senile cataracts. Do you still call them senile cataracts?
No, because you don't have to be old to get them.
The incidence does increase as you get older, 42% in people ages 50 to 64, 60% 65 to 74, and 91% in 75 to 85. Eric, explain what a cataract is.
Well, I like to tell people that a cataract is, to some degree, is inevitable with age. It's kind of like getting wrinkles or gray hair. It just kind of goes with the territory. It's just a natural cloudiness of the lens of the eye, and the only way to get rid of it currently is with a surgery.
You pop the cloudy lens out and replace it?
That's right. You have to actually surgically enter into the eye and sort of use a ultrasonic vacuum cleaner or some other technology and remove the lens itself and put a plastic artificial lens in its place, and that plastic lens stays in your eye for the rest of your life.
Now, two things I should note. First of all, Rick perks up when you say ultrasonic vacuum cleaner.
No, right, no, Rick away. Wanted to leave the room when you started talking about doing surgery on my eye.
But wouldn't you love to have an ultrasonic vacuum cleaner? I don't know what that means, but I just think, man, I could get my work done a lot faster. I do the vacuum in my house. I want you to know that.
I would say it sucks pretty fast.
Yeah. We'll call it Health Matters.
If it's ultrasonic, it's moving pretty fast.
Yeah, that's true. So you put this plastic lens in, and then, I mean, my patients absolutely love this. I tell people, look, if you can get cataract surgery, I mean, if you need cataract surgery and you get it, it's going to open a whole new world. All of a sudden, you've got a clearer lens again. I guess the question is, why not put that plastic lens in, say, for guys like me that are very nearsighted? Does it not work better than a 60-year-old lens does?
There are options available. There are surgically implantable contact lenses, and then there some people will do a quote-unquote cataract surgery on people who don't actually have cataracts. But, of course, insurance companies don't want to pay for that. So that is money that's coming out of people's pocket. But, yes, that is a possibility. That's a surgical option, and many people do that kind of thing. As far as if it works as well as your natural lens, it doesn't work as well as your lens does when you're 20 years old, because your young lens is able to change shape, and that allows you to see both at distance and up close. And there's still some technology that needs to be worked out to really maximize and optimize the artificial lens's ability to what we call accommodate or change shape or allow you to see both at distance and up close simultaneously.
See, I got this lens in my eyes right now that it really is not very accommodating, to use your word. That is, I have trouble focusing on things that are very up close. I, of course, have reading glasses at my age, and just the idea of getting a fresh lens is very appealing to me at the same time. But certainly, if you have cataracts, this is a wonderful thing, giving you much of your vision back, that starry-eyed thing that happens when you're looking at lights that affects your night vision. Also, the cloudiness of the lens, moving that out is very, very good. Now, we know sun exposure. We need to wear protective lenses anytime we're outdoors in the sunshine.
Right. That's believed to help some.
And diabetes is also another risk factor for cataracts. The second one, and we'll end it with this one, is glaucoma. 3 million people in the U.S. have glaucoma, second leading cause of irreversible blindness worldwide. Explain glaucoma, please.
Well, it quickly gets more complicated, but just for the general audience, the most basic knowledge is that it's basically a deterioration or a disease process in the optic nerve. So your eye is kind of like a camera, and your brain is kind of like the camera processing unit, and there has to be a cable to connect your camera to your computer, so to speak. And so glaucoma is sort of a degeneration or a deterioration or a disease process in that optic nerve, the cable from your eye to your brain.
I can't believe it here. You know, again, you're just – Rick, why don't you just take things over? I mean, he's talked about an ultrasonic vacuum cleaner. He's talked about a USB cable. Clearly, I am
he
not –
He poked around in my eye. I'm out. I'm out. I'm doing everything I can not to get queasy and have to run out.
Rick's sweating heavily, not looking too good right now. So the glaucoma, the problem is with the pressure on that optic nerve.
Here we go.
Right. Yeah, again, it does get complicated. You can have normal pressures and still have glaucoma, but generally, most of the time, it is associated with there was thought of as a pressure problem inside the eye that causes pressure on that nerve and causes damage to the cells of the nerve.
Risk factors: age over 40, family members with glaucoma, African or Hispanic heritage, high eye pressures. As you mentioned, for many people, the pressure of the fluid causes a problem with the optic nerve. Farsighted or nearsighted, you've had an eye injury, have corneas that are thin in the center, thinning of the optic nerve, and then again, if you have diabetes. So again, both cataracts and glaucoma are those diseases of the eye that can be associated with diabetes. Now, we're going to get into other diabetic eye disease in our second fractional portion, but that is our sponsor, the top four diabetic eye conditions. Now, this is a segment where we talk about our guests, and I've always been, Eric, since I think we had you on the show in 2013, been really interested in how you got to where you are. You, first of all, your medical degree came from Georgia Health Sciences University in Augusta, Georgia. You are a Georgia native?
That's correct, yeah.
And then you went to Spartanburg, South Carolina, which is really just right across the line in South Carolina, and worked with the School for the Deaf and Blind in Spartanburg. What were you doing for them?
Oh, I was volunteering, basically. I had an interest in the eyes and trying to help people see as best as I can. But I know that, you know, with today's technology and our current knowledge, we can't always help everyone. And so I wanted to get some idea as to what is life like for people who have irreversible or, you know, permanent visual impairment. And it was just a real, real neat experience to be able to work with that population and just get to know some of those kids.
After residency, you went to Swaziland in Africa to do cataract surgery. How did that come about?
I've just always wanted to work internationally, and it seemed like the perfect time to try and do it. And I just looked around and asked around, emailed around, and was finally able to get in contact with someone who was looking for some help. And so I was able to spend a year in Swaziland working underneath a doctor who has worked there for many years. He's South African trained, and Swaziland is a country of a population of about 1 million people, and he, at the time, was the only practicing ophthalmologist in the entire country, so trying to service a population of 1 million people. So as you can imagine, he had lots of work and was more than happy to have me come alongside and try and bear some of that burden with him.
What's the difference in doing eye surgery in a place like that and doing it in the United States?
Well, like I say, because he was the only eye surgeon in the country, we did do a lot of cataracts, but of course we had to do other eye procedures as well. And so you quickly become, you know, you're forced to sort of do more specialty type procedures. And then as far as the cataract surgeries themselves, most of the patients do not seek help unless they are profoundly blind in both eyes. So you're dealing with extremely advanced, mature cataracts. And so in that sense, the lens is tremendously hardened, and the ultrasonic vacuum cleaner type technology is actually not the best idea. It just is – the lens is so mature that there are some real disadvantages to that technology. So you actually do a different type of procedure. It's a larger incision, and it's all manual technique, so there's no fancy equipment. So it's much, much cheaper, but it's still amazingly, amazingly effective, especially if you walk in, you know, unable to see the big E on the chart with either eye. And then, you know, you have this procedure done, and for about $50, you can make someone be able to see again. It's really a miracle.
I would echo that. I can imagine that. And just for Rick's edification, what you're saying then is you sort of shuck the lens out of the eyeball.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony.
You have to use a lot of thumb pressure.
Just kind of release. I'm going to release a snake in your car.
No, I just so. But
well, you don't
I
have to worry though. I'm terrified of snakes.
Yeah, that's true. With these harder lenses, we don't have time. We'll pick this up in our second fractional portion. Try to figure out how you got from Africa to the University of Kentucky and the state of Kentucky. And I will say we are so ever grateful that you were able to make that trip. But first, we're going to take a break, and you should take a break, too. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Please stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Dr. Eric Higgins Eye of the Diabetic Tiger Show, because from the University of Kentucky, the Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology, Dr. Eric Higgins, is with us here. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks. Hi.
Our sponsor for the second time, the top four diabetic eye conditions, reminding you 8% of the U.S. population is diabetic, and 28% of those diabetics have eye trouble. And the topics, the four eye conditions, the two that we talked about last time, cataracts. And again, this is a clouding of the lens of the eye. 42% of people ages 50 to 65, 60% 65 to 75, and 91% 75 to 85. It clearly is age-related, but it also can clearly happen in younger people. Also, Eric, if you had trauma to the eye, you can get premature clouding of the lens, right?
That's right. And some people are just born with them.
Hmm. Glaucoma, the second thing. 3 million people in the U.S. have glaucoma. It is more common in people with diabetes. And again, we talk about eye pressures, but as Eric pointed out, really the hallmark of glaucoma is dysfunction of that optic nerve. For whatever reason, the signal from the eyes is not making it to the brain, and that is glaucoma. The third eye condition that we're talking about today is diabetic retinopathy, a leading cause of vision loss globally. And, matter of fact, I think the most common cause of vision loss in people with diabetes. One-third have signs of retinopathy. One-third is vision-threatening. And tell us a little bit about diabetic retinopathy. Now, I know it's a big topic. I with my primitive knowledge of eye problems, know it's a big topic. But can you explain what we mean by diabetic retinopathy?
So basically, we think of diabetes as a blood sugar disease, but the real problem is it's a blood vessel disease. And, of course, we have blood vessels in all parts of our body, including the backs of our eyes. So the main problem is that the blood sugar causes damage to the blood vessels in the back of the eye, and that can cause two or several different things, but two main problems. It can either cause bleeding because the abnormal blood vessels grow and they're fragile and they bleed. Or it can cause the vessels to leak a fluid, and that fluid accumulates in the back of the eye, in the retina. And, of course, the eye is an exquisitely fine-tuned piece of machinery, and so any fluid buildup, of course, is going to lead to diminished visual quality.
You know, and I've always been puzzled by this, and I always hesitate to get a guy on the radio show and ask difficult questions, but, you know, I'm not
aware. But you
aware.
Do it anyway.
Yeah.
But it's the conjunction
that's
there.
The fun part of it. But, you know, this is a really odd thing. I mean, I know that diabetes causes problems with the blood vessels elsewhere in the body, but the retina and to some extent the kidney as well are where this really shows up. And you mentioned there is the formation of new blood vessels, neovascularization, we call it, because that's a fancy word for new blood vessels. But I'm not aware of new blood vessels forming elsewhere. Is the retina really that unique in forming new blood vessels, or is it just more sensitive to the process?
Well, it has a couple things going for it. First, it has a high metabolic rate, so it does use a lot of blood. It needs a lot of blood. And it also is just a sort of a unique space in the body where it's not surrounded by a lot of other tissues. It's really has this nice vacuous space in front of it for the new blood vessels to grow into, and for the sort of molecules that cause that blood vessel formation to float around in. And I think those couple things combined really facilitate that.
A high sensitivity to loss of blood flow combined with a nice soup that grows new blood vessels.
You got it.
I can buy that. I'm gonna.
You had me at soup.
Rick every once in a while looks up soup, ultrasonic vacuum. I mean, there are certain terms that really get his
attention. It just works, man.
Yeah. So that is our sponsor. We're going to come back and touch that again in our third and final fraction portion. But that's our sponsor, Top 4 Diabetic Eye Conditions. And again, we've covered cataracts, glaucoma, and now diabetic retinopathy in a rudimentary way. We're going to come back to it a little bit later. But we left last time in our last fractional portion, we left Dr. Higgins in Africa, and I thought the least we could do is bring him back to the U.S. So after you had that surgical experience in Swaziland, how did you get from your residency, from that post-residency job to Lexington and to the University of Kentucky?
Well, so I just wanted to be in an academic institution, and I already had experience. I actually did my residency at the University of Kentucky, so I already was familiar with the faculty and the program, and I knew it was a really great place to be. And I just I was fortunate enough to be able to somehow convince them to let me come back on board. So it was just a really sort of seamless transition.
What's the difference between UK and Georgia?
Ah,
15 degrees,
football and basketball.
15, 18 degrees.
I'll give you that.
I can say that I have, I love the people of Kentucky, and not that I don't love the people of Georgia as well, but it's truly a special place to me, and it really has become home.
And at the University of Kentucky, again, you've always been reaching out to underserved populations, whether it's in Africa or whether it was your work with the School for the Blind and Deaf in Spartanburg. What's been the outreach that you've been doing at UK at Lexington?
I've done some work with the Nathaniel Mission Clinic, and the biggest project really has been trying to spearhead a project to really increase the rates of diabetic eye exams in the more rural or underserved populations of the state of Kentucky. So it's really been a multi-year project of mine that is starting to take off.
Now, before we get to that, and I do want to come back to that then, so you're at the University of Kentucky, you're working on trying to get these diabetic screening exams going, because one of the things we know is that this the diabetic retinopathy, if you catch it early enough, you can protect a person's vision.
Exactly, and that's very, very important to remember.
So before we're going to head back to that, but I've got one question that I just had to mention. This was Reuters News, it was a comment on eye doctors and the solar eclipse. And they said a lot of hospitals reported zero cases of damaged vision. Vanderbilt they said that was right where there was a totality there. They said they had several and were basically devoting extra resources to it. But in other places, they were surprised at how few people came in. What was the experience at UK and in Kentucky?
You know, I haven't heard much from my other colleagues, but personally, I only had one patient come in who was just concerned that he might have done things incorrectly, and it turns out his eye exam was totally normal and he was fine. And I haven't heard anything different from my other colleagues, so I think we sort of missed the brunt of that, and I think people either heeded the warnings or, we weren't a total eclipse, so it's kind of hard to look at the sun even when it's mostly blocked out. It's just so bright, so we kind of dodged a bullet on that one.
I will tell you. That was my experience. I mean, I hate to say it because I was a little bit underwhelmed by the whole thing. I was expecting a little more darkness. I wasn't expecting complete darkness because I knew we were in Lexington was kind of a 94%, area. So, but I was amazed at what 6% can do to light up the place. And so you're right. It was very difficult to look up. And it still looked like a large sun and it still looked very round, even though it was just the top sliver of the sun. I mean, we actually got, through the glasses, you could actually see how much was actually there. And, it was very interesting, but you couldn't. There's no way without the glasses you could actually just look up at it without going, whoa.
And not like you saw a crescent.
You'd have a
rather bright sun.
Yeah, it's just it really was like looking up today. I mean, it was very much like looking up today, except it was a little gray out.
I think it was bright enough to quickly inform you that this is not a good idea. I probably shouldn't do this.
Yeah. We had the guy brought his welding helmet, and that was actually the best view I saw of the whole thing through the welding helmet. It was better than any of the glasses or boxes or, whatever it was you were looking through. I really enjoyed looking at it through the welding helmet. It was great.
And you can still see.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that. I don't want anything else to say.
I was actually able to take my little old cell phone, my Galaxy S7, and actually put some of the lens material that's on those glasses up on the camera, and I was actually able to get some pretty decent pictures. So, hey, I didn't hurt myself. I didn't hurt my camera. I got like 2 hours off of work, kind of, sort of. Everybody was outside watching for about an hour.
Yeah, I agreed. Back to diabetic retinopathy.
You brought up the eclipse.
I'm glad to hear from you about the eclipse. Let me.
Were you not underwhelmed?
Actually, I was amazed. I will tell you. I put a couple pictures on the Facebook page. I was in a shady area, which you would think was the absolute worst place to view the eclipse. But the tree leaves acted like little pinhole cameras.
Right.
So instead of a sun-dappled forest floor,
you saw a bunch
what
of
you
little
had was
moons.
A whole bunch of crescents on the floor. And so, in effect, the forest floor was sparkling with crescent suns rather than the usual just smooth-edged sun-dappled.
That's just the way you've lived your life, Tony.
And so, yeah, the way I live my life is when the sun is being eclipsed by the moon, I'm looking down at the ground. That's me missing the boat again. But it was beautiful, and I was amazed and uplifted. It was, for me, a very beneficial experience. But my wife and I agree, we're going to try to go to – we decided we're going to – next time we get close to totality, we should make the trip.
2024, huh?
Yep, if we're
What is it about Kentucky and Madisonville down in that area down there? What is it about that is the epicenter of everything? I mean, right? It's in this totality. It's in that totality. It's got a fault line. I mean, it's around six states. I mean, yeah.
Things be happening in Madisonville.
That's well, your... I mean, it's that area down in there that, you know, Murray. Hey,
you should work for their tourism industry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
come here,
I mean,
something awful is going to happen. And you want to be a part of it. I don't know, Rick. Anyway, we got to get back to diabetic retinopathy.
We don't have to.
Yes, we do. This was the American Diabetic Association position statement. And correct me, this was an update of their position statement from 2002. It appeared February 21st and also was reported in the March issue of Diabetes Care. And one of the things they said, people with type 1 diabetes. Now, type 1 diabetes is the type of diabetes that if you don't get insulin every day, you could go into a diabetic coma and wind up in the intensive care unit. They should have a comprehensive exam within 5 years of disease onset. And most of these are younger people and teenagers. So you're talking about teenage kids having an eye exam to look for this retinopathy. Those with type 2 should have an exam at the time of diagnosis because they are older. If that looks good, one or more annual eye exams, things look good, then you can drop back to every 2 years or you can consider that. If you see any level of diabetic retinopathy, you need to have an examination repeated at least once a year by an ophthalmologist or optometrist. That's their position statement. And that, then, is a lot of eye exams considering the rate of diabetes in the United States. Now, I'm going to go further. I'm just going to keep talking because I've got the microphone and I'm pushing Rick away. They said around this was March 27th after these recommendations came out for young people with type 1 diabetes. There are clear screening guidelines. 2/3 of children and adolescents obtained an eye exam in one study, and it appears that those with lower income, limited socioeconomic resources, are less likely to get a screening exam. And that's been your experience, Eric?
Oh, absolutely.
Why is that?
I think probably multiple factors. Somebody, whether a parent or the patient themselves, has to get off from work. They have to schedule the appointment. They have to keep the appointment. Oftentimes, the eye physician is not very local. They may have to drive. And you sort of start adding all of that up, and it becomes quite a burden. And if you're more limited in your resources, it could tip the scale to it's harder to keep the appointment.
The an ophthalmologist who could institute treatment for diabetic retinopathy, they are less common in rural areas around the state of Kentucky. Optometrists are capable of doing the screening examinations and can identify it. But again, if you're looking at treatment, you're going to if you're from rural Kentucky, odds are that you're going to have to travel because ophthalmology services are not as frequent. We do have regular ophthalmology services here in Moorhead, but in many communities, especially in smaller communities, you're going to have to do some driving, certainly, to get treatment. So let's go back and review on that then. We've got a situation where a significant number of diabetics, people with diabetes, we have a large number of people with diabetes in the first place, a significant number of them are going to have diabetic retinopathy. And again, this is a change, a leakiness of the blood vessels, the formation of blood vessels that aren't quite as good as the blood vessels you used to have in response to the changes of diabetes. The leaking and the growth of these new blood vessels can damage the back of the eye, the retina, and you get diabetic retinopathy. The recommendations are to screen, 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 because by the time you notice a change in your vision, you're in pretty deep trouble.
That's right, yeah. You want to catch it early, and the best time to catch it is when you don't even know anything's going on at all. You're totally what we call asymptomatic.
Children with type 1 diabetes, 5 years with an onset of the diabetes. Because, again, they're young kids. They got good eyes. And you know when type 1 diabetes starts because it is a life-threatening condition. Type 2 diabetes, we're not sure when it starts. It could have been there for a while before we diagnose it. Therefore, the American Diabetic Association recommends eye screening as soon as you're diagnosed, and then again annually. And if you've had negative eye exams, you and your eye specialist can work out possibly going to every 2 years, but no less than every 2 years, Eric?
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, we don't actually even bring up the two-year number because we just find that it kind of gets confusing with patients sometimes, and we don't want to miss anyone. So we just find it's sort of cleaner, easier just to stick with an eye exam every year.
And again, this the idea of picking it up early. Now, let's go then. We've talked about then if you have symptoms of loss of vision, you've really waited too late, you're in some pretty significant trouble. We screen, and if you do find somebody who has diabetic retinopathy, what are you going to do to help that person out? How do you manage that?
Well, there's stages. So if it's a certain stage, you just screen them more regularly. You just screen them more than once a year. And then once the stage sort of reaches a certain level, then you have a couple of options depending on what's happening. And the treatments could involve lasers or injections are the two most common treatments.
Now, the laser treatment, if I understand it, you sort of tattoo these lasers across the back of the eye. You're not necessarily aiming at a certain blood vessel, or do you target certain blood vessels?
No. Well, in the most common laser for diabetic retinopathy for the new blood vessel growth, you're just trying to decrease the oxygen demand of the back of the eye. So you're actually, it's called pan-retinal photocoagulation. So you're just ablating a large portion of the peripheral part of the retina.
And again, the way this works, as you said, by reducing the tissue, you reduce the amount of oxygen as needed, and that reduces the drive then for the new blood vessels. Now, for Rick's edification, talk about the intraocular injections.
Oh, come on. That's just wrong. Tony knows I went through an incredible amount of pain, trial, and tribulation last year just to get on contacts.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get on contacts. And now, granted, my visual life is a lot better now. Uh-huh. As a computer guy, not being able to see a computer screen,
limiting.
It's pretty bad. You know, I went from like a 20/10 vision 10 years ago to, obviously hitting the mid-40s and starting to deteriorate. Anyway, so I had my trials and tribulations with putting contacts in my eyes.
Well, you would not be the first patient that's a little bit hesitant and not real interested in having a needle.
You can say squeamish. It's okay.
Not wanting to have a needle stuck in their eye, but we do it all the time. We get you nice and numb, and I can just tell you right now, you would fly right through.
You better get me nice and asleep.
Yeah. But I know that that's really difficult, isn't it, Eric? I mean, the procedure itself, my understanding, having never had a needle in my eye purposely, the procedure itself, the way you do it is really not a painful procedure.
No.
But explaining it to the patient, I actually have one student who worked in a clinic and was in charge of explaining it to patients, and she said that this was a very, very difficult sell to try to get people to accept it.
You might have to explain it a couple of times, but I can tell you this. When you tell them that this will help preserve their vision, I've never had anyone reject it.
We're going to take a break and let you contemplate the fact that getting an eye injection appears to be less objectionable than Health Matters, and we're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Dr. Eric Higgins Eye of the Diabetic Tiger Show because we have from the University of Kentucky Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology, Dr. Eric Higgins. Welcome back, Eric.
Hey, Tony.
Our sponsor for the final time, the top four diabetic eye conditions. 8% of the U.S. population is diabetic. 28% of diabetics have eye trouble because of it. We talked about these problems. Number one is cataracts. We all, hopefully, will live long enough to get cataracts. That's your goal out there in radio land. You should live long enough to get cataracts. 91% of people ages 75 to 85 will have them. I got to say, for no obvious reason, clear protein in the lens of the eye. The fact that your body can make a clear protein is just extremely cool.
I totally agree.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it doesn't stay clear after the first 70 years. It starts to cloud up. You can use your ultrasonic vacuum to remove that cloudy protein, replace it with a plastic lens, and by golly, you're good to go again. And we strongly recommend that diabetics have a higher rate of cataracts because, again, they have protein problems in general because of the effects of the sugar. The second one is glaucoma. It is a dysfunction of the optic nerve, often related to the pressure of fluid in the eye, but it can occur even with normal fluid. Diabetics have a higher rate of that. There is medical treatment to lower the pressure, but still, glaucoma is a common cause of vision loss, and approximately 3 million people in the U.S., diabetic and non-diabetic, have glaucoma. That's why you should get your eye pressures measured when you go to the eye doctor. The third of the four conditions, diabetic retinopathy, this is a growth of new, immature, not particularly highly functional blood vessels, again, related to the fact that your eye needs a lot of blood supply, and it is capable of growing these blood vessels, but unfortunately, they are poorly functioning. They bleed. They also lead to damage to the back of the eye. Now, again, if we screen, and this is what we were talking about last fractional portion, if we look at the back of the eye, we see evidence of diabetic retinopathy, we can take steps either to inject a chemical that stops the blood vessel growth, or we can use lasers to reduce the oxygen demand of the back of the eye. Either way, we can, in many cases, save vision. And you mentioned in the break that one of the important things for everybody to realize is that in a certain age group, in younger Americans, diabetic retinopathy is the number one cause of blindness.
Yep, in working age adults.
In working age adults, the number one cause of blindness. So this is really, this is nothing to sneeze at, and it is something that if you or someone you love has diabetes, after 5 years, teenagers get these exams annually. If you have type 2 diabetes, you should start as soon as you're diagnosed and get an eye exam, a dilated eye exam every year to check for diabetic retinopathy. We can pick it up, we can treat it, we can prevent the blindness. We do not want to wait until there are symptoms. So if you have that ability to get to an ophthalmologist and you have diabetes, you most certainly should do that. Diabetic, the fourth one is diabetic macular edema. Can you explain that, Eric?
Well, we'd mentioned that diabetic retinopathy has two components. It has the new blood vessel growth, and then it also has the leakiness of the blood vessels. So the diabetic macular edema is the second component of that, where the blood vessels, they're just compromised, and they leak. The watery part of blood leaks out of the out of the blood vessel and accumulates in the back of the eye. And if you kind of think of your retina like the film, and if your eye were a camera and the retina were the film of the camera, it'd be like getting a watermark or a smudge on that film. Of course, the image is not going to be of very high quality.
Again, the four conditions: cataracts, glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, diabetic macular edema. These are more common in diabetics. All of them potentially can cause vision loss, and certainly diabetic retinopathy, the number one cause of vision loss in working adults. The thing is, we can prevent in most cases, Eric.
Yeah, over 90%.
Of cases, we can prevent that vision loss if we pick it up early, if we wait until you start having dark spots in your vision because we did not do the screening, then it is too late, and you can't then go work backwards and try to prevent the blood vessel from forming that shouldn't have formed in the first place. A reminder from the American Diabetes Association, if you have a type 1 diabetes, you need insulin to avoid going into a coma, you start within 5 years of diagnosis because you know when that diabetes started, and you get annual exams. If you have type 2 diabetes, your sugar could have been high for a while. You start as soon as you're diagnosed and you get annual exams. But the key thing is you get those annual exams because that's the way you're going to protect your vision. We cannot stress that enough. Now, the interesting thing about the annual exams, we sort of left this last fractional portion. It requires an ophthalmologist for treatment, or it used to. And in that case, it was inconvenient. You go to your regular family doctor. You get your diabetes checked on. He says, have you had your eyes examined? You say, no, Rick.
Okay,
because I'm afraid of getting needles in my eye or something like that. I don't know why you don't get your eyes examined. You should get your eyes examined.
Tony, I had to have had my eyes examined to get contacts.
I'm sorry. We just get off track here. But at any rate, the rest of you should get your eyes examined, too.
Yeah, doesn't mean I'll let people stick needles
Rick
in there.
Does. And so you go to your doctor, and he makes these recommendations. But then you have to go make an appointment with the eye doctor and go to the eye doctor. And the eye doctor, of course, has to communicate with the family doctor so that everybody's on the same page. It can happen. It happens all the time, but is certainly not that convenient. And, Eric, I know you've been working on some technology that has really made a difference in that.
Right. So you hit the nail on the head, so to speak. That's exactly the problem, is a lot of times the patient will know that they have diabetes. They will have been told that they need an eye exam, but they never quite follow through with making the appointment, keeping the appointment, and then, you know, having the eye doctor send the records back to the primary care. It's a lot of steps. So we just figured, you know, there's got to be an easier way. And currently our thinking is that the ideal situation is that the primary care doctor has access to a camera in their clinic. You know, so these can be widespread. They can be in rural areas. They can be in urban centers. And the patient sits down in front of a camera. The primary care doctor or a staff member takes a picture of the back of the eye. We send those on the internet over to
on the line.
Send those over to us at UK or some other professional reading site. And your images are interpreted. We tell you if there's problems back there or not, or if everything looks clean. And then we send those interpretations back to your primary care doctor so that your primary care doctor can tell you, you know, with more certainty, you have a problem, your eyes need to get checked on, or everything looks okay with your screening eye exam, and we're good to go for another year.
Now, let's remind our radio fans of what an eye exam is. Now, and no disservice to those who do it. It's wonderful what they do. But the first thing, in order to do this type of exam of the back of the eye, first thing you've got to do is you've got to put some eye drops in to dilate the pupil to the eye so you can see the back of the eye. And we all know what that means. That means that pretty much you have just lost the morning or the afternoon.
Right.
Yeah, because your eyes are dilated. And I will tell you, one time I tried to work after getting my eyes dilated. I was young and I didn't quite think things through, and I hadn't had a dilated eye exam in a while. So I got over there. I couldn't read my patient's charts, and so I would talk to people, and then I would just sort of scribble some notes. And after finally my eyes went back to normal, I was able to open their records, and I was able to write things down. This was before computers, but it was just a big mess in there. And I usually lose that time because I can't quite focus. Now, the neat thing about this camera is you don't have to use those eye drops.
For most patients, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. You can. What it does is it gets its focus with infrared that doesn't disturb the pupil. The pupil's wide open. Bam! You get the picture before the pupil has a chance to constrict down. And so, in fact, you wind up with a nice image, a very clear-cut image. And you walk out of the doctor's office after having a fundoscopic exam with a photograph, and you drive yourself home because you didn't have to get those eye drops. So there's one huge advantage for most people. Not everyone, but for most people.
That's right.
The second thing is, as far as time goes, again, this is one-stop shopping. These cameras, you said you've got them set up in clinics. Can you, before I talk about the second, about the convenience of it, tell us about that grant that you got and how you've gone about getting those set up.
Yes, so Rob Sprang at the University of Kentucky and I put together a grant, and we were fortunate enough to get funded, and it just gave us some seed money to try and get out the word, to try and help some people out with getting some cameras in their offices so that we could show other people that this concept works. We could kind of work, iron out the kinks, so to speak, while we were going along in that initial trial period. And now we have, you know, I guess you would say we've graduated. We're out. We're no longer grant funded. That grant ended about a year ago, and we are kind of on our own, doing our own thing. So it's kind of up and running. And every grant site that we had on board that we enlisted, they are continuing to work with us. And plus, we continue to add cameras at different sites, at new sites as well, outside of the grant.
How many sites do you have?
Currently, 15.
And you mentioned there are other groups also operating in the state to try to increase the availability.
Right. There are other companies doing similar things outside of the University of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me make this health matters prediction. You look at this and you say, this is absolutely the future. If I want to know what's going on in your chest, I send you to the radiology department. We get a picture of your chest. The picture gets sent to a specialist who interprets it. If it's normal, then we continue to care for you. If it's not normal, we send you to the specialist. This is the same thing except for the eyes. It's like an EKG. It's like a chest X-ray. This is an opportunity to have a specialist look at a durable picture of the back of your eye. The other thing is, I would imagine it's easier to compare year to year
right.
with that photo.
Right. So the main caveat is that it's currently only to screen for diabetic retinopathy. So we're focusing the picture on a certain part of the back of the eye. We don't get an entire view, and we don't get a view of the entire back of the eye. So we're really focusing in on, we're concentrating on, does this patient have diabetic retinopathy? Now, in the meantime, we can also pick up on signs that other things may be going on. For example, cataract. We can have some things that would indicate that the patient has significant cataract, and we can report that to the primary care doctor. Also, very importantly, glaucoma. We can look at the optic nerve in the picture, and we can also give the primary care doc a heads up that, hey, it looks like this patient may have glaucoma. We really need to get them seen about that as well. But again, the point, we're not trying to do a comprehensive eye exam. We don't claim that we can see all parts of the eye. We're really focusing in on the part of the eye that's affected by diabetes, and we're trying to look for diabetic retinopathy. So at this time, it's really focused in on that part, on that condition.
So I would ask, you're checking for a lot of things, or you're able to do a lot of things. Are you able to bill for this?
That's kind of a complicated story.
No, and I suspect that it would be, because I mean, I kind of grew up in telehealth, and telehealth billing was always a problem, was always a detriment to trying to, because it couldn't be an additional fee, and then in some cases it couldn't be a fee at all. And I know Kentucky, to some extent, if you're a member of the Kentucky Telehealth Network, which I'm sure Rob Sprang is deep into, so I'm sure everything is. But if you remember that, then you can get billing. But I suspect every other state in the nation, to some extent, has some type of a billing problem when we start trying to do this kind of thing. So, Tony, you were talking about this is where we should be. This is where we're going. The problem are the systems behind it that are supporting it financially and bureaucratically, logistically, able to keep up. And I suspect the politics behind this isn't able to keep up with the technology.
Right. So that is a big issue, and that's a big sticking point. I would say things are improving. They're moving in the right direction. It's becoming easier and easier. And each state has its own unique problems. In Kentucky, I will say that primary care doctors are so interested in the health of their patients, and they're so devoted to this problem. They've seen it so many times that in some ways, they're almost, in a sense, taking one for the team and really chipping in a lot of resources that they're not necessarily fully reimbursed for in order to make this happen, in order to grease the wheels. So I've just been really – it's been amazing to see how frustrated people are with not being able to get their patients – their patients aren't being screened appropriately, and they're figuring out a way to make it work.
You know, and I will say again, this is clearly where we are headed in terms of diabetic screening. And I think of me trying to do a fundoscopic exam. I'm looking for the eye findings in certain diseases, and I'm sitting there. Right in your face, like Darth Vader, and nobody wants that. And this offers so much advantage.
I don't even like it here.
Oh, yeah? Well, let's take this, Rick. How about that, huh?
The thing is if I don't listen to the show, I won't have to hear that ever again.
But still, the discomfort of it, and again, married with the inconvenience of trying to find a place where a person can do this is really a great thing. This is a very strong step forward, and imagine the idea that you can go back and look at what your fundus looked like, that area of the fundus looked like a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, and you can see progression, which you might not be able to notice if you're trying to recall it from memory, which is what we do when we do a regular exam. So these photographs are, this is a great way forward. regardless of reimbursement. And reimbursement, again, financial issues are really in many ways holding us back in medicine, and this is just one of those. But we think this is certainly the direction that we should be heading in medicine. I'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Eric Higgins from the University of Kentucky, Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology. Rick, can you get us off the air?
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters was first used to treat eye diseases in the early 70s and has become the standard of care for previously untreatable disorders. For many patients, Health Matters can preserve or prevent vision loss in a timely fashion.
There are no special preparations before Health Matters treatment. You should eat normally and take your regular medications before the show.
Health Matters is performed in our office. Eye drops will be given to dilate the pupil and numb the ear. The show is performed while you and us are seated in a chair, similar to the one used for regular eye examinations.
You will remain awake and comfortable unless you actually listen, and you'll probably fall asleep. Health Matters is usually painless, although some patients may require a numbing injection for discomfort or sensitivity to Rick Phillips.
Health Matters usually takes less than 60 minutes to complete, although Tony is long-winded. And you can go home immediately following the show.
Read the script.
Arrangements for transportation should be made in advance, since you may not be able to drive right away.
Whatever you do, do not hick. Health Matters. Lying down, get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.